Welcome on to our continuing season preview series here on the Dunked On Basketball podcast. We have a guest who is a little pressed for time today, so we're going to get right into it, talking about the Miami Heat, Ethan Skolnick of the Miami Herald. What's up, Ethan?
Hey, good to be with you, Nate.
Yeah, so congrats on your new gig. First of all, you're back covering Miami sports, but in general, right?
Yeah, no, I'm going to be covering the Heat specifically, actually.
Oh,
so, yeah, I'm you know, working for a radio show down here, hosting in the afternoons where I do a little bit of everything, but my day job, or writing job, will be strictly on the Heat and the NBA. So it's something that you know, I've done down here for, you know, on and off for the last 20 years, so it's a pretty comfortable fit to slide right back in.
Well, great, yeah, and I've been reading your blog already. It's good to have you back doing daily stuff about the Heat, and you're one of the more plugged-in guys, so that's great to see, to keep up with the Heat as well. Obviously a great addition to the Heat reporting. So let's start off with a question that, you know, I think is I would normally start with, but maybe doesn't mean that much, and that's how good were these guys last year, but that goes to the question of who they even had last year, which was a lot of guys missing, frankly.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it's very hard to evaluate them because they were never whole. You know, I mean, they started the season, I think, probably with inflated expectations. I think that, you know, their belief that they could recover from LeBron right away probably was overstated. But again, they thought if they had Bosch and they had Wade and they had, you know, they didn't know that Whiteside was going to fall from the sky to them, but they thought they had enough on that roster. I think now you look back at that roster and you say, well, you know what, there were a lot of holes there. Now, even if their projected starting lineup, which at the time included Norris Cole and Josh McRoberts, if that starting lineup had played more than 34 minutes together, would it have really mattered? I'm not sure that it would have. I mean, they probably make the playoffs, but probably don't advance out of the first round. Now, a couple things happen, though. Of course, you know, Whiteside, you know, comes in. The trade for Dragic on this very same day that Bosch goes to the hospital for blood clots, which eliminated the chance of them really doing any damage down the stretch of the season, which would have sort of gotten them back into the playoff hunt. So, you know, now this is obviously a much more full roster. They have a starting lineup that, you know, that doesn't appear to have a clear weakness in terms of at a position. I think that they're are some issues with the starting lineup that will need to be, you know, sorted out, or else, you know, if they can't be sorted out with the current group, they're not going to go as far as they want. But, you know, clearly this is a more talented team than they had last year. And the way that I put it is they were relying on guys who aren't even in the league right now. Like Shannon Brown was supposed to be Dwayne Wade's fill-in. Danny Granger.
Oh, yeah, the depth was horrible last year.
Yeah, I mean, Danny Granger was supposed to play significant minutes. Sean Williams was playing at the beginning of the season. You know, Danny is still rehabbing. Sean's not in the league. Shannon's not in the league. So, you know, they've been replaced by guys like, you know, Gerald Green, Amari Stoudemire, Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson. I mean, the depth is much, much better than it was last season.
So, yeah, I think if you had asked them at the beginning of the season, what are we expecting to get out of Wade and Bosch? If you look at what those guys did when they were healthy last year, I think they would actually have had to have been pretty happy with what they got from those guys.
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, Chris got off to a very fast start, and then it was a little bit less consistent after that. And then it's really hard to evaluate the last 2 or 3 weeks he played because he was playing at less than 100% lung capacity, which he didn't realize at the time. So I'm going to cut Chris, you know, a bit of a break for that. You know, as far as Dwayne goes, you know, Dwayne had to do some things last year that I'm not even sure he thought he could still do or that he wanted to do. He had the second highest usage rate in the league. His usage rate was back where it was pre-Big Three era, which is not something at 32, 33 years old that they were hoping Dwayne would have to do at that point. I thought that he acquitted himself pretty well under the circumstances. I mean, he still shot a high percentage. Still, you know, was one of the leading scorers in the Eastern Conference, you know, and still, you know, on a given night, and we saw that with a 42-point performance and a couple of other, you know, very strong performances on a given night, he could carry them. But, you know, that's not something they want long-term from him, or even at this point short-term. They don't want it at all, you know, for him to have to feel he has to do that. You know, they want to be in a situation this year where, you know, they have five starters Four in particular with Deng kind of, sort of a gravy option offensively, but four guys who on a given night can give them 20, where instead of relying on somebody to have to give them 30. And last year, if Dwayne wasn't sort of in the high 20s, shooting a high percentage, carrying them down the stretch, they probably weren't going to win.
Hassan Whiteside had an enormous breakout last year, but still pretty volatile at times. Had some kind of weird fouls, technicals. He would disappear for certain games. Now he's injured in preseason with this calf. What are you expecting out of him this year? What are the Heat expecting out of him? On the one hand, he's making the minimum. This is a huge contract year for him. He could get life-changing money if he has a good year. But, there was a reason that he was playing in Lebanon like a year and a half ago.
Yeah, and the reasons were twofold, attitude and aptitude, the way it's been put to me by scouts. The Heat didn't take a chance on him because, they had this great plot, put out a guy who was going to be a 20-point, 15-rebound, 5-block center. I mean, they went to him because they were basically desperate last year. They didn't have enough bigs. Memphis, they had him, then Memphis, they're D-leagued, and Memphis put him on their roster. Memphis cut him. Miami jumped in and decided to sign him, which was largely the doing of Chet Kammerer and Adam Simon making a recommendation to Riley that, we should take another flyer on this guy. They had no idea that he was going to produce what he produced. Now, as you mentioned, now the question is, can he sustain it? And can the fact that he has this motivation to, make big money, can that be a positive for the Heat, or does that at some point become a negative? You would think it would be a positive because you're going to get his best effort and you're going to get his best behavior. There are veteran leaders on this team that can help show him the right way, whether it's Udonis Haslem and Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, or, whether it's Juwan Howard on the coaching staff or Alonzo Mourning in the front office. Like, they have plenty of people in his ear. He's just got to stay, on course. And they don't know. I mean, if executives and officials are honest, they don't know what they're going to get out of Hassan Whiteside. And again, he's not really a trade chip because he's a free agent after the season coming off a minimum deal. It's not going to be attractive to other teams. And at the same time, Miami's going to be a bit of a quandary after the season. Because, he's the biggest bargain in the league at the minimum this year. But then if he plays the way that they hope he plays, then he's a $15 million a year player probably at that position. And Miami's going to have
maybe even more.
Yeah, and I think if that happens, Nate, then they're going to have to make a decision because with, the idea that they're going to have to pay Dwayne again after this year, and Dwayne has made it pretty clear he's not taking huge discounts anymore. Bosh still on the books. They really don't have the room to sign Whiteside for big money and also pursue someone like, say, Kevin Durant, which is what Pat wants to do. So, that's the thing. If they're going to have to make a decision, first thing during the season, they need him to contend and compete. But after the season, they're going to have to decide, is this a guy we can go forward with after we give him money and years? Is he going to be as focused as he was when basically he didn't know where his next job would be?
Yeah, and the reason that there's basically they have to decide between giving money to him or free agents is because he's coming off a minimum contract. Normally you'd say, great, he's got a small cap hold. They can just sign other guys and then exceed the cap to re-sign him. But since he's only been on the team for 2 years, the most that they can offer him to start with is either 175% of his prior salary, which is not going to be very much at all. He's making the minimum this year. Or they can offer him the estimated average player salary, which will be probably just slightly south of $6 million. If he plays well, neither of those is going to get it done. So then anything they pay him above $6 million, that comes right out of cap space. And it's not like they even get to subtract the $6 million either. If they pay him $7 million a year, that's $7 million they can't pay somebody else. So let's get into a little more prognostication of this year. I think it's a big deal that Josh McRoberts is back. How healthy is he now after having that meniscus repair? What is he going to bring to this team that they may have been lacking last year?
Well, the thing he gives them, and this was more critical, I think, last year when they didn't have Dragic, and they really, you know, Eric Spoelstra was planning on running a lot of his offense through Josh because he didn't have maybe a traditional point guard, and he also didn't have LeBron to pick up that slack. But I still think that they can run some offense through him. And I think, you know, as a playmaker, Spoelstra and the team are very excited about what he can provide. The only caution, you know, that I wish with Josh is, you know, he's had a hard time staying healthy lately. It was kind of one thing after another last year. And then in camp this year, he's been going pretty hard. And, you know, now this week he's had to take some time off again because he's had some soreness in the knee. And that's the question is, you know, that's the question with a lot of their players. And that's why I think that their depth is going to be so critical and why, you know, I don't think it's wise to subtract a lot of it simply for luxury tax reasons, which is why you would probably be trading a Chris Anderson or a Mario Chalmers. They have a lot of guys, whether it's Stoudemire, whether it's Mick Roberts, whether it's Chris Anderson at 37 years old, who are going to need to be paced this year, who are not going to be playing probably back-to-backs, where maybe you would play Anderson one night, Stoudemire the next night. And in McRoberts' case, you want to try to keep him healthy, but like I said, it was pretty much one thing after another last year. So I think that he can be very important for them, you know, as a passer, as a spacer. You know, he did shoot 36% from three 2 years ago. The biggest issue that I see for this team offensively is they don't have a ton of knockdown three-point shooters, you know, guys who, you know, like to sort of operate behind the arc. You know, McRoberts doesn't do it all the time, but under Steve Clifford in Charlotte, he had become more of a stretch four type. So I think that there's a lot of different ways that they could go with him. You know, I would think right now, the way it was put to me in the offseason, and this is before they added Stoudemire, but what I was basically told once they had their starting lineup assembled was that the two guys that they really saw as big contributors off the bench this year would be McRoberts and Winslow. Those were the first two names that kept coming up. Then obviously since then they've added Stoudemire, added Green, retained Chalmers and Anderson, which gives them, you know, about six guys off the bench. But I think Josh can be important for them, but again, they've got to keep him healthy.
Yeah, that's the concern. And really those are the two biggest weaknesses that I see with this team is just the lack of spacing. And I'm worried that even though you have a lot of names on this team, number one, those guys are going to need some time off and, you know, are also decline risks, frankly. I mean, once you get past 28, 29, you know, you're probably going to be going down a little bit each year, and Wade and Bosch obviously are pretty far into that phase already. But the spacing is another one. I think that there's a very big risk that these guys are going to be less than the sum of their parts offensively just because they don't even have that one guy who you absolutely can't leave open at the arc.
Yeah, and especially, again, the starting lineup, I think. You know, off the bench, if Chalmers can recover from last year where he shot 29% for three, he's typically been in the high 30s. If Gerald Green can do enough defensively in terms of moderating himself a little bit, he's kind of a gunner. But if he can earn enough of Eric Spoelstra's trust, then obviously he's a threat from three. But if you look at the starting lineup, I mean, you know, Whiteside obviously not, Dwayne obviously not. So you have three other guys there, okay? And in Dragic's case, he averages about three attempts a game. He will shoot the three on sort of on step backs. He's comfortable doing that. He's not quite as comfortable as a spot up shooter. And so that's something that he's going to need to work on, but Spoelstra doesn't want him really straying from what he's most comfortable with, which is attacking the basket. And then you look at Deng, and he did shoot 35% from three last year. So that number was up. He also was up in attempts, but Spoelstra wants him closer to six or seven attempts a game as opposed to three attempts a game. And Luol said that he'll embrace that, you know, and particularly from the corners.
Yeah, he's been talking about that for 10 years, though, you know.
Well,
you have to think it's never going to happen for him at this point.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, right. And you know, they can, he says, you know, I talked to him about this during camp, and he said he's finally going to start doing more of it because he realizes where the game has gone and because he knows that this starting lineup requires it, which you're right, until we actually see it in the game, we don't know. And then you have Bosch, who is comfortable taking a three as a trailer, or if he really has an opportunity to set his feet, somebody sets him up. But obviously, look, you know, they want Chris to be an active, you know, offensive player all over the floor. They don't want him just standing out at the three-point line. So, yeah, that starting lineup does not have a ton of traditional spacing in it. And, you know, and as far as you look at the backups, like I said, Winslow is not at the stage where you're comfortable with him shooting a lot of threes. He has a slow release, a little bit of a hitch in his jumper. He's going to have to fix that over time. So you're really just talking about Gerald Green, who, like I said, is a player who I'm not exactly sure Spoelstra's going to trust as we go later into the season, when Eric, I think, would probably go with stronger defenders, whether it's more minutes for Winslow or whether it's the rookie Josh Richardson, who's made a big impression for them so far.
Yeah, it's a dilemma because you think Dragic and Bosch, you know, Wade is still pretty good, but those guys might be their two best offensive players. But at the same time, those guys are probably the best shooters, at least relative to the other guys at their positions, point guard and power forward. Do you think then, one of the things I thought is maybe what they're going to have to do is their spacing is going to be so choked that they're going to have to go more with McRoberts over Whiteside and get a little bit more spacing that way. You think that's a lineup we're going to see a lot of?
Yeah, I think that's very possible. And again, I think that was the plan last year, with like Chris more at the five with McRoberts at the four. And I think you could see it. And I don't think Whiteside's going to be more than a 25 to 27 minute a game player anyway, for a couple of reasons. One is that I don't know that they're comfortable with his stamina at much more than that, but also the foul trouble, which, you know, he averages 4.1 fouls per 36 minutes. So if he picks up too early, then, you know, he's going to be on the bench, and probably McRoberts would be the first sub in with Bosch to let them play together a little bit. You know, the other thing is, you know, I'm sure we'll get to this as we go on, but their second unit is challenged a little bit defensively. And so, you know, Eric's going to have to make decisions based on that also, you know, because you don't want, for example, Stoudemire, and that doesn't help your spacing, having Amare out there necessarily, and you don't want Amare out there for 20, 25 minutes, because defensively that could be a disaster if he plays too many minutes. So these are, you know,
yeah,
what I
him
think
and
about
Green
roster,
together would be a disaster.
Well, that's the thing. And right now that's what they've gone with in the preseason. And if you're looking at that second unit, say, you know, for the sake of argument right now, that they're first five off the bench, and Eric typically doesn't go 10 deep, but if we're to say that for right now that Chalmers holds off Tyler Johnson and Josh Richardson, maintains the backup point guard spot at least to start the season, so you're basically talking about Chalmers, Green, Winslow, McRoberts, and Stoudemire. There's only one strong, you know, plus defender at this stage of their careers, I think, which is Winslow. You know, and so you're relying on a rookie who looks terrific on that end right now, but you're relying on a rookie to be a lockdown guy right away. You know, Mario, when he's engaged, I think can still be a plus defender, but the other three spots, Stoudemire and McRoberts inside, Gerald Green at the two, that's a very defensively challenged group, which is why Eric's going to have to do a lot of mixing and matching, make sure that Deng is out there with Winslow at times if they have, you know, more challenging matchups on the perimeter, or also have Whiteside anchoring that group at times, because otherwise, again, I mean, you're going to be talking about probably a layup line in terms of going to the basket. So, I look, these pieces individually are really interesting for this team. I think they have, you know, this is a very talented roster. I think it's a high 40s roster in terms of wins, but I think it's also one of the most challenging rosters that Spoelstra's had, because you know, he's gonna have to cover for one of two issues with the way that he mixes and matches. Either, you know, he's gonna have to take care of the spacing offensively, and also though make sure that defensively he doesn't have three or four positions out there who are just sort of overmatched on that end. So this is gonna be a juggling act, I think, for Eric all year long.
Yeah, to me, Bosch is the guy who can make all of this happen, right? His versatility is going to be the only way they can get by, right? Because he can do so many things on both ends. Offensively, he can spot up to the three-point line if you need that in a given set. I really like the way that he matches up one-on-one against some of the power forwards on the teams that they could be playing in the East playoffs, guys like Kevin Love, Patrick Patterson, teams that might want to go small at the four as well. Nikola Mirotic, another guy that the Bulls have Gibson and Noah to match up, but it doesn't look like they want to play that way. So I think he's essential in those ways, and you know, also as a playmaker off pick and rolls, pick and pops, he could do all that. And then defensively, he can play the five, he can play the four, but he's got to kind of get back to that level of activity that he showed during the championship years. I thought there was a little bit of a drop-off from him in that respect last year, and they were carping about how bad their defense was over the first half of the year. Do you think defensively that he can get back to the level where they need him to be?
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think last year what happened was that there was a lot of pressure on Chris from the start of the season to be the number one option. I mean, you know, the year that Dwayne had, everybody sort of forgets that really we were framing Dwayne as the number two guy to start the season, and that Chris was really going to have to carry the load offensively. And I do think he, you know, took a deep breath on defense. I don't think he was as engaged defensively. So you would think now, a couple things have happened. One is he's talked about kind of his renewed enthusiasm for the game about after what he went through last year. So you would hope that, you know, he would basically be playing as if every game is his last to a certain degree. And I think then you'll get better defensive effort. I also think too that having Whiteside with him, which they really didn't get a lot of time together last year, and because Whiteside came on, you know, then, you know, Whiteside, you know, had a suspension thing. Chris then got sick, and was out. And so they weren't able to build a lot of chemistry. But you would think if Whiteside can be disciplined, all right, in addition to sort of being menacing as a shot blocker, that it would allow Chris to get back to really doing the things he did so well during the Big Three era, which was blitzing the pick and rolls.
Are they going to play the pick and roll that way this year?
They've made some tweaks. I've talked to Spoelstra a little about this. They've made some tweaks, and I'm not sure they've shown everything that they're going to do yet. I was told that they weren't going to be as aggressive as they were. But then again, I was told that in year four of the Big Three also. And I think what happened in year four of the Big Three was that that team got sort of old and tired and didn't have the athletes or the enthusiasm to blitz the way that they did previously. And we saw what happened in the finals against San Antonio, where the players were all carping about, you know, from LeBron on down, were carping about how, you know, the defensive system wasn't working anymore. And by then it was too late to really change it. So I don't think they'll be quite as aggressive. I think that Eric's going to have to do some things to hide guys. Again, you're talking about below average defenders in Amare, in Gerald Green, right?
Wade, too, in the starting lineup at this point in his career. Dragic isn't fantastic.
Right. So you don't have, you know, look, I think Deng at this stage is still above average, particularly on certain nights. But look, he's got a lot of wear on him also. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's 30 years old now, and, you know, he's probably 36 in Tibbs years, you know. So, I mean, you're talking about a lot of minutes, a lot of injuries that he's had to play through. So, yeah, they're going to have to – they can't be as aggressive as they've been. Now, I would say the one thing, though, is that, you know, during the Big Three era, they didn't have a shot blocker, you know, in their starting lineup. And so they may be able to gamble a little bit more than they would otherwise because if Whiteside can clean up some of the mess. And, you know, again, he's got to do that without fouling, and so that they can keep him on the court for, like I said, the 25 to 28 minutes that they think would be his comfort zone. So, again, it's tricky on offense. It's tricky on defense. It's one of the reasons that I keep saying that I really like the parts of this team, but it's going to be up to Spoelstra to make them as good as the sum of their parts, and I really think that's going to be challenging.
We touched on this a little bit. Do you think there's any way they can make a trade during the year to upgrade? I don't really see it that much because you got so many guys in the last years of their contract, or guys who obviously in Wade and Bosch, you know, they're never going to trade.
Yeah, I don't see a big move coming this year. I think the big move was made last year. They have almost no draft pick currency anymore, which is what Pat uses. And I mean, unless they're going to go to like 2030 at this point,
I think they literally cannot trade another first round pick at this point because they owe so many out at this point.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, they don't have any currency to move at this point. You take a look, too, at the players they could trade. I mean, if they make a trade, I think it's going to be a cost-cutting move. The conversation about Chris Anderson and Mario Chalmers being out on the market was real. They were looking around. They thought maybe during the season somebody ends up with a need. It kind of changes the equation a little bit. I think the fact that Josh Richardson has impressed so much as a second-round pick gives them a little bit more freedom to move Mario if they feel the need to do that. I don't think you're talking about a big ad. Remember also that Pat still wants to get in the room with some guys next summer. And so he's not going to be adding salary unless it's something like the Dragic move, which sort of came out of nowhere. And I don't think that, again, they have, because they don't have the draft picks, they don't have the assets to make that kind of a move again this year. So I think this is their team. Whiteside has almost no trade value because he's on a minimum, and we talked about sort of the issues with his contract.
Yeah. They need him, too. If they're willing to get rid of him, it's because he's playing so badly that his value is going to be lower.
Right. And the other thing is the whole loyalty and commitment. You mentioned it. I mean, Wade isn't going anywhere, and I don't think there'd be a market there, and Bosch also. So, no, this is the team that they're going to go into the season with. I think, you know, with the exception of maybe a subtraction here or there with the guys I mentioned, this is the team they're probably going to finish the season with. They viewed this as they wanted to remain competitive until 2016. I think the Dragic move accelerated their timeline a little bit. And I also think with the 2016 class not being maybe as strong as they and others had anticipated, because so few guys ended up taking the one-year deals this summer that everybody thought they were going to take. So, they're going for it now. And the players feel differently about this, I'm sure, but in the front office, like, they want to take a run at LeBron now. And I think that's going to drive Pat until he ultimately walks away. No, when I say take a run at LeBron, they want to take a run at beating LeBron in the East. That is a clear motivator for some in the front office, you know, including Riley. And, then they want to take a run at Durant in free agency because the reality is that probably to beat LeBron in the Eastern Conference, at least until LeBron's prime is clearly over, you're going to need a player like Durant. And here's the biggest thing, Nate, with this team. What one scout said to me, and I think it's pretty accurate, is that they have three guys in their starting lineup with Wade, Bosch, and Dragic who can still on a given night give you an A-minus game, okay? Can still maybe it's 30 points, maybe it's an all-around game, whatever it is, but can still be an A-minus type player. And then they have Deng, who's still a solid. I mean, if he's going to be your fifth starter, you know, you can certainly live with that. But what this scout said to me and others I've talked to is this really comes down to Whiteside in large degree, because he's the one guy who can be an A-plus player on both ends on a given night and then a D the next night. And you just don't know. And so he is the ultimate X factor for them. And if what we saw last year was not a mirage, if that's who he can be and he can build on that, then they feel very good about their chances of going deep into the playoffs. But if he slips back to what he's been prior to that snippet of time last year, then they're probably looking at, you know, at most second round, but probably a first round exit.
Yeah, and Whiteside missing pretty much all of camp, it seems like, with this calf injury, can't be helping things. So you touched on this at the end of your last answer, but what do you see as the best case scenario for this team, and what's the worst case, without getting into some massive injuries, just kind of things just don't really go right aside from that?
Well, I think they're. I think let's start with worst case. I think they're a playoff team no matter what this year. Again, barring the injuries and even with some injuries, because they almost made it last year with everything that went wrong. And so I still think they have enough in the East to sneak into the playoffs, even if some of these things don't work out the way that they hope. I think their best case is probably Eastern Conference Finals. I don't know that they currently have enough to beat a healthy or relatively healthy Cavaliers team. I still think if again, the trump card is LeBron, and I look at the two rosters and I say, okay, well, the Heat, feel good about guarding LeBron with Deng. He's had some success against him. But
Yeah, I don't
if
like Deng against him as much as everyone else seems to. Like, I think he's just not athletic enough to really like make LeBron uncomfortable, in my opinion. Maybe that's a minority view, but
Well, yeah, I'll say this. They feel good about it, and they saw it a little bit last year. And I think the Christmas game was a little bit of an anomaly, Nate, because LeBron's emotional about that game coming down here to Miami. And Lamal probably played his best game of the season, actually, against him. But, they feel good about it. We'll see if how it works out. I mean, they're going to need a second defender on him, which probably is going to be Winslow, I think. And that will be interesting because I've been very impressed with Justice defensively, but are you ever ready for that assignment?
Yeah, and I mean, and that assignment being Winslow is kind of more like shooting guard height, and LeBron
Yes.
works in the post so much now too.
Right. LeBron has 3 inches on him, and so that will be a bit of a challenge. But I think, look, I just look at Cleveland overall and they're clearly going to pace themselves a little bit this season, whether it's with Love's recovery, whether it's Irving's recovery, Shumpert being out for a couple months. I mean, we're not going to really see the complete Cleveland team probably until January or February, and LeBron's going to pace himself. But in a series, I think for Miami to beat them, again, I keep coming back to this, but Whiteside would have to be dominant, I think.
Yeah.
Because they have a ton of bigs, obviously, in Cleveland, provided that Thompson's going to be there. But they don't have anybody quite like him, in terms of, athleticism and ability to score and change the game defensively. He is a physical freak. And, he could change a couple of games by himself. He could make LeBron think twice about coming in the lane. And I think that's sort of their one chance. But I would still favor Cleveland. As far as the rest of the East, though, again, if they can stay healthy, if they can figure out the spacing issues, if they can cover up for some of these sort of defensive weaknesses, they have enough talent to compete with Chicago, compete with Washington, compete with Toronto, compete with Atlanta. It's just a question of how quickly it all comes together.
So, last question. I know you got to go in about 5 minutes. How do you think they match up with the rest of those teams that you mentioned? Who are they going to be want to avoid in the playoffs? Who are they going to be kind of like, all right, we can take these guys?
Well, Atlanta killed them last year, just killed them. And the ball movement killed them, and that may still be a problem. I know Atlanta's going to look a little different without Carroll and with Splitter, some of the other changes, but that was a real problem for Miami. Just again, defensive quickness overall and kind of staying with the game plan defensively, which they didn't do. Atlanta just picked them apart. Again, I think Miami's better equipped to take them on now. I kind of like their matchups against Chicago. Whiteside obliterated them last year inside.
I
I mean,
recall.
and I don't, Noah looks healthier, so that's a plus. They're going to be playing differently, obviously. But I do like some of the matchups against them. I think obviously, look, Dwayne's going to have to get up for Jimmy Butler and really defend him. But I think, in terms of the Dragic-Rose matchup, provided that Rose is healthy, I think Miami feels comfortable with that one. I think you look at, Toronto. Traditionally, the Heat have had success against Toronto. I know different rosters that you're dealing with there, but I'm okay with how they match up with them also. Washington, I kind of think I'm among those who thinks Washington's going to take a little bit of a step back this year. I like a little bit of what they did to patch things up after Pierce left, but I'm not sold on the Wizards. So I look at all those teams and I say, everybody has holes. Everybody's got questions. Chicago with a new coach. Washington, can they replace kind of, you know, Pierce's shot-making ability late in games? Toronto's going to play differently now with Carroll, no Amir Johnson. So, I mean, everybody's got things they've got to sort out. It just seems to me like I think Miami has maybe more individual talent in terms of depth of roster than those teams, but maybe a few more issues to sort out in terms of how they're going to make it all fit.
All right, putting you on the spot here, what's your predicted regular season record and playoff finish for the Heat this year?
Well, I've had them at some, you know, I changed it by the day, Nate, but I'm gonna say 47 wins. I think 47 and 35. I think that probably will be enough for a 3 or 4 seed in the East, and I have them currently going to the second round and losing there. And I don't know who it's going to be that they lose to. It could be Cleveland in a 1-4 matchup, something like that. But that's about where I have them. But, again, I think there's some variance here both ways. And I could
yeah.
see them in the Eastern Conference Finals. If Dwayne is healthy, if Whiteside has really emerged, and put together a full season like we saw that snippet, and if they can find a way to defend a little off the bench, I could see them in the Eastern Conference Finals. But I have them second round, 47 wins. I don't know that Heat fans would be ecstatic about that, considering what they had those for those 4 years. But I think, you know, compared to sort of the hell of last year, I think most of them would probably take it.
So would you favor them in a playoff series over everyone except the Cavs? It kind of sounds like you're leaning that way, but maybe I'm misinterpreting.
Yeah, I think I would, again, if things break right. Like I said, I think
yeah.
their upside potential is greater than those teams. But those teams, you know, I think continuity matters. And I think, you know, the fact that Toronto, you know, just on a small scale thing, like Wade and Dragic, I did a story this week about how they're still working on their communication and figuring out how to play together. Wall and Beal already know how to play together. DeRozan and Lowry already know how to play together. Like, these are things that the Heat are going to have to figure out kind of on the fly here. And like Dwayne said, you know, well, now I've kind of figured out how to play with Goran, but now we have to figure out how to get everybody else to play with us, you know, because we didn't have Doc. And, you know, Whiteside was kind of a new piece last year, and we have a different role for him. And so it's just, there's just more uncertainty. I think Eric Spoelstra did not get enough credit for getting those two teams to the playoffs. Before LeBron came, I think he didn't get enough credit for the way he adjusted after the first year of LeBron and created a whole new way to play. I think last year, if I would evaluate Eric's performance, I think he didn't make them worse, but he didn't make them better. I think he kind of just got stuck in the circumstances. This is going to be a big year for Eric because, again, this is a year where the coach is really going to matter for them. And in terms of who he plays people with, what kind of style he plays, is he willing to sit down some of his, you know, so-called stars? If he's got other guys who are going well, how does he convince, you know, guys like Chris Anderson and Amar'e Stoudemire, who played pretty big minutes, you know, over the course of their careers? Okay, you're not going to play tonight. You know, the other guy's going to play, or you're going to get 6 or 7 minutes. This is it's going to be a very complicated thing for Eric. I keep repeating that, but I think it is, and that's why I say I think their upside is higher than these other teams. But I think it could be a bumpier ride, maybe, than say, you know, just for a team like Washington or Atlanta, which has kind of established what its identity is going to be at this point.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on. We appreciate it. Where can we catch up with you on Twitter?
Ethan J. Skolnick, ethanjskolnick.
Awesome. And anything you've written that's kind of longer, maybe, that we could direct the listeners to?
Well, again, I just wrote this piece sitting down with Wade and Dragic this past week about their collaboration. I wrote a column last night about
I read that one
about Winslow, and how, you know, a lot of Heat fans are getting a little panicked about the offensive, you know, I wouldn't say struggles, but just he's been a little bit invisible on a lot of possessions, and tried to make the point, look, you know, if you saw Jimmy Butler's first year, if you saw, you know, Kawhi Leonard's first year, Paul George's first year, it took him a little while to figure out things offensively, too. You know, I think the thing that you're happy with Winslow is he's a committed and clearly, you know, advanced defender at this point. And the offense, I think, will come. And on a team like this, the offense isn't really that necessary. You know, they really need him to be reliable on the other end, and it looks like he can be that.
Yeah, and he's also a really nice transition player as well, which I think will help mm-hmm. them because they're not going to get a ton of points that way otherwise.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, thanks so much for coming on. You can follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. Listen to the rest of our season preview podcasts as well. This is the 13th, and we got a bunch more coming this week. So thanks to Ethan for coming on, and we will talk to y'all next time.